Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledersma. I'm chairman of the GAS programme and senior fellow at the Institute. And it's my great pleasure to be joined today by Mikhail Maiden, who's director of the China and the GAS programme at the OIES. And we're here to discuss the key messages from her recent China Energy Brief, China's Strategic Petroleum Reserve, that's SPR release, a test of mechanisms rather than a show of market might. Now, just to timestamp this podcast in the ever-changing world of our business, I'm recording this with Mikhail on the afternoon of Monday, the 27th of September, 2021. Welcome to the OIS podcast series, Mikhail.
It's great to be here again, David.
Now, let's talk a bit more about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, SPR. Now, China did its first release on the 24th of September. Now, as I understand it, Mikhail, SPR releases are for emergency shortages, and the US did an oil release during Hurricane Ida, and they've been using it for supply shortages. So what I'd like to ask you is, what's going on in China that led to this?
And I think, David, that's really a key question that the market is still grappling with, because, of course, there hasn't been an emergency in terms of sort of a supply outage or sort of physical shortage. In fact, you know, Chinese imports have been slowing over the past few months, and we actually discussed that in our previous podcasts. So really, that has been kind of perplexing as to why all of a sudden this release. Now, in the run-up to this SPR release, we did get a lot of messaging from the Chinese government about inflation, concerns about inflationary pressure. We've had releases of grains and metals. So to a certain degree, this continues on that trend and kind of the attempt to tame inflationary pressure. And it also goes back to kind of the origins of the SPR, because we have the IEA's, of course, SPR mechanisms, and those are emergency response. But China, from the get-go, from 2003, when the SPR was created, talked about it as an emergency response mechanism, but also as a tool for managing prices and managing the market.
Okay, but why now? And what is the significance of all of this?
Again, I think we do have that inflation element. Commodity prices have been rising. Of course, we're feeling it all over the world and we're seeing it everywhere. It's not just oil, but of course, all the other commodities, in part on the back of the strong recovery, both in China and sort of an emerging economic recovery elsewhere. So there may be an element here of a signal to OPEC and a signal to kind of the IEA and the markets that China has reserves and it is willing to use them to tame inflation. Again, the market is very much seeing this as China saying, we can control prices. But if you look at the first release, which happened just last week, Friday the 24th, it consisted of a little over 7 million barrels that were offered, ultimately a little over 4 million barrels that were actually bid. Now, it might sound like a lot, but China imports 325 million barrels or imported 325 million barrels in August. So, and that's the kind of scale of Chinese imports. So when you're thinking about 4 million barrels in that context, it doesn't really move the needle in terms of price. There is, of course, an impact on market sentiment, and we'll discuss that a bit later as well. But and a big part of that is the uncertainty. Fine, China released 7 million now. What if it releases another 30 million? That starts to have an impact. But I actually think that this was more about testing the mechanism.
Okay, so can you therefore share with us what is the mechanism? And, you know, what is the point of testing it?
Again, a great question, because up until now, China hasn't had much of a mechanism, and that's really been the problem. We know that there was an SPR that was launched in the early 2000s. In the initial stages, we actually got some reports of the fills with kind of a year delay, but we know that there were tanks that were designated for it. But also in the early 2000s, China, when it looked at its 90 days of forward cover, which is what the IEA mandates, it was talking about 500 million barrels. Today, 90 days of forward cover is closer to 1,000 million barrels, to a billion barrels. So there's been this program, this strategic program, and the state-owned companies, the state-owned oil and gas majors operated the tanks. And they've been apparently releasing crude when they needed to. They've been replenishing the crude when they needed to, but it really hasn't been sort of a formal release mechanism. We haven't had triggers for a release. We haven't had anything to suggest, you know, when and why is China releasing and when is it sort of filling it back up again. And to a certain degree, what we're seeing now is the government closing some of these loopholes and just putting in place procedures. So what we've learned really is that the reserves are managed by a relatively obscure administrative body. It's not the Energy Administration. It's actually the State Food and Reserve Administration. They've created an online platform for the auctions. They detailed, sort of, they gave out very detailed rules and regulations about the bidding. And so the September 24 release was really a trial implementation of the platform. I think in the next few weeks, what we will see is how the delivery operates. Do refiners take it via pipelines? Do we get only the local refineries bidding for the crude, or does it go elsewhere in China? And then how is it perceived? Because I think that will tell us about future releases and how this mechanism could continue to work.
So this sounds actually, Mikhail, quite a kind of a routine process. So I'm just wondering, you know, why are the markets caring so much?
I think because the SPR has been very, very opaque. It still remains opaque. As I mentioned, we've had, there are sort of 9 tanks, so there are a number of designated SPR tanks that are relatively well known, but they hold roughly 300 million barrels of crude, designed to hold 300 million barrels of crude. And as I just said, for China to have forward cover, it needs a billion barrels. So there's another huge universe of storage tanks that are owned by refiners and private owners that tend to get filled. And we do know that in the past, when prices have been low, China has stocked up on crude. We haven't really seen China use its tanks formally in order to mitigate prices or, again, to deal with a disaster. So this mundane thing is important because it also tells us which are designated SPR tanks. And again, going forward, when and how China could potentially release crude back into the market.
Now, of course, your paper also sets out kind of the locations of these SPR locations. So to the readers, there's a lot of details. So I urge you, of course, to read the energy brief. But I come back to this kind of the implications of this release. So I'm just wondering, you know, why is this such a big deal for the oil markets?
So again, oil markets and observers, you know, when you look at global balances, you look at supply, you look at demand, you look at what Chinese refineries are consuming. And historically, China's always bought a bit in excess of that. And that has been to feed some kind of storage, strategic or commercial. But at one point, and we might be close to that point now, when China fills its 90 days of forward cover, it will no longer buy in excess of its needs. So that's one thing, of course, that the market cares about. And how much is that excess? You know, we don't even know how much China has bought in excess of its actual needs. So going forward, if China imports on average 10 million barrels a day, is it actually 9 or is it 9.5? Again, those are big movements in the market, especially when we're thinking about sort of peak oil in whatever 5 to 10 years. And the other question is that once China has finished its stockpiling, when will it start releasing crude? Because if China again releases, again, the 7 million barrels, it's not huge. But if there are sustained releases and that amounts to 200 or 300,000 barrels a day that China no longer needs from spot markets or no longer takes from its term contracts, that weighs on physical spreads, that weighs, of course, on sentiment, but also on actual buying.
Yeah, and as you said earlier on, you know, with the huge growth in energy and specifically oil demand in China, you know, these are big numbers you're talking about. So I think that kind of leads me to wonder, you know, why wouldn't China use this to influence global prices? Because after all, you know, as we said earlier on, it's the world's largest oil importer.
And the simple answer to that is that China could actually use its SPR to influence prices. Again, at the outset, it was designed as something, as a tool of managing prices. Although I think when you read the language, it is much more domestic focused. It does look at the internal market dynamics and at China looking to tame inflation and sort of control its internal processes. You know, and as we've talked about, what China's done so far is very, very much a fraction of its imports. And it will probably do a few other releases. I would imagine that they'd want to test how the mechanism works further south. This was done in northern China. You know, you want to see how it works with refiners in southern China. You want, again, to see, again, the mechanism and just the physical infrastructure. But I think when we think about influencing the markets, these are bureaucrats in China. And it seems unlikely to me that bureaucrats would take a punt, basically, on the market, on where it sits and future trends, and stake a strategic reserve, which is ultimately a buffer for an emergency. So it would kind of, you know, punt its view and stake its country's reserves on that view. That seems a bit, even, you know, DOE doesn't do that, you know, the Department of Energy in the US. So I think, you know, it's more likely to leave that hedging activity to the companies, and even the refiners don't do it typically in China. It's the traders that do that bit of it. The final thing, of course, to bear in mind is that anything that is released from stocks today will need to be replenished. So, you know, maybe they can, of course, you know, what we didn't mention is that the crude that was released from stocks in Dalian last Friday, it was bought in April, May 2020. So we're looking at oil that cost $30, $40. It was sold at $65, $70. So the refiners that bought it made the margin because it's less today. Oil is above 70, 74. And the state made some money. And so that will go into state coffers and that will help it to replenish those reserves. But it will need to replenish those reserves. And I think, again, that's the next thing that we'll see. Do we get any rules and regulations and procedures about how and when to buy in order to fill the tanks?
Yeah, and as we've said in earlier podcast recordings for China and indeed other countries in Asia, security of energy supply is a key government policy. So actually, you know, the importance of that reserve and restocking that reserve is very important. But coming back to the first release, which you've been talking about, you know, are there any lessons from that? And, you know, and what should we look for if there are further oil releases from storage?
I think to a great degree, the first auction went pretty much as expected and quite smoothly. There are a few interesting points in it. So when the government issued the guidance, it did say that any bidder would have to be an integrated refinery, so refinery and chemicals facility. And that typically means that it is not the independent refiners in Shandong province. It's only the larger integrated refineries. It also said that it would need to be used for chemical and chemical processing, which again points to the kind of newly created mega refiners. And at the end of the day, at Dalian, where the auction happened, you had three refineries that could have bid and two that actually did. One of them was a new independent refiner. The other was a state-owned, was PetroChina. That went pretty much as expected. These are both refineries that are connected via pipelines to the tanks. Not all the volume was bid, which was interesting. Out of 7.4 million barrels, only 4.4 was purchased. The price, again, was below market prices, so good margins for the refiners, good revenue for the state. And I think, again, going forward, we'll have to see the next releases, and we're not 100% convinced that there will be, but I think, you know, I think if this is a test of mechanisms, then it makes sense for the government to release from additional SPR tanks in central, well, sort of along the coast in kind of Zhejiang province, and then south in Guangdong province in the kind of manufacturing and exporting hubs. This is where it becomes interesting, because if we get more releases, they could start to impact domestic prices. To the extent that, you know, refiners make a better margin, they can sell products at a lower wholesale price, which would help. Maybe it wouldn't help prices at the pump, because there are lots of taxes on prices at the pump. But prices for industrial users, it could actually help agricultural, you know, industrial manufacturers. You would need more releases for that to happen. But I think that will be interesting to see in the next few releases. And also when you combine it with the fact that the government has been reducing the amount of products that companies are allowed to export, you have to a certain degree a saturated market. And so again, prices come down, and that could help mainly industrial users rather than kind of prices at the pump. But I think we'd need more releases in order for that effect to happen.
Reading between the lines, you think we are going to see more releases?
I would imagine that we'd see another two, again, for the geography of it, and probably similar kinds of volumes, again, for the geography, for the mechanism, to see that refiners know how to get into the system and upload all the paperwork that they need to upload and are doing everything as it should be done.
And you mentioned geography, and of course, we mustn't forget the physical size of China, which of course is also going to have an effect on that. But just coming back to kind of talking about, you know, the actual releases themselves and the size of releases, you say in the comment that buying will depend on the outlook for demand rather than the SPR itself. Can you perhaps elaborate on that comment?
And so I think the markets have gotten really excited about the SPR release. And initially the speculation was that there would be anywhere from 30 to 70 million barrels released. And of course, that then really weighs on imports kind of at the prompt. But I think we're looking more likely at 20 million barrels over 3 months. And again, when you spread it out, the market impact on immediate imports is limited. We have to also bear in mind that crude imports were slowing even before the SPR release. So I think really it's more about what happens to, well, the economy and therefore refiners' demand. And you know, if we assume that China is now, you know, on our estimates, China has, when you look at all the stocks combined, SPR and commercial and others, China is roughly at 90 days. So I think we can assume that the excess buying is nearing its end. So markets are going to be more reliant on Chinese demand, or more exposed to Chinese refining demand for imports. And here, this is a really interesting question: what happens in Q4? Now, Q4 is usually quite active. We've got kind of an agricultural season that helps diesel demand. We've got, well, holidays right now in China in September and October, Golden Week, and, you know, the national holiday. So there's typically a lot of travel. November is Singles Day, what's known as Singles Day, which is kind of the Black Friday and Cyber Monday rolled into half a day. And again, that leads to a lot of consumer demand and freight. All really good sort of times for oil demand. And then we kind of get close to the end of the year. Refiners like to stock up ahead of the Chinese New Year, which is usually January, February. This year, Q1 22, we also have the Winter Olympics. So again, you want supplies, right? They'll want to make sure that they have plenty of supplies, especially with what you're seeing now globally, right? Gas prices are so high, power demand, you know, even coal supplies to China are constrained. We could see some switching to liquids, to kind of oil and diesel. So they won't want to get caught short, especially when the Winter Olympics are on. On the flip side of that, there is another COVID outbreak in southern China that's leading to travel restrictions again. And travel restrictions will take place during the Winter Olympics. So, I mean, again, I think the system will want to have plenty of supplies, but during the Winter Olympics, things will come to a halt around those areas, A, for COVID, and B, for pollution reasons. And we also have the Evergrande fiasco, which is China's biggest property developer that's about to go bust, probably. And there are concerns about what that means. Again, I don't think we're facing a Lehman moment in China, but it is a big property developer. And if it goes bust, then there will be less economic activity. So, you know, a lot of the optimism in the market has to be tempered slightly with the kind of risks that are looming for the Chinese economy. Again, it doesn't mean collapse. It just means that there isn't a huge uptick in oil demand. But the point is that oil flows will depend on refiners' needs and how they perceive the demand outlook in China, and not whether or not they're waiting for the government to release 5 or 10 million barrels from the SPR.
Which is, as you said earlier on, a relatively small amount when we look at the overall demand picture. Well, look, Mikhail, as we come to the end of this podcast, you know, I always like to end up with a kind of forward-looking question. And you've set out kind of very clearly some of the drivers for the next few months and the importance to have the supply there with these forthcoming increased demand periods. You mentioned, of course, the Olympics next year. So I think I'd just like to ask you, you know, the SPR is likely to remain obviously an important element, but how important a part of Chinese overall energy policy will releases from the SPR be?
And I think the SPR itself remains a very important part of energy policy, even psychologically, right? Knowing that you have that 90-day buffer and that you've communicated to the world that you have it and you can use it is significant. I mean, I don't think at any point in the future, despite energy transition and concerns about peak oil, China's not going to get rid of its SPR or try to reduce the the volumes it has. And so SPR remains a very important element. And for the markets as well, the movements, sort of when China fills and when China destocks, be it strategic or commercial stocks, is hugely significant. But I do think that the Chinese government will be cautious in the actual releases. You know, the way they're perceived by the market is one thing, but the Chinese government's willingness to use it as a tool to influence prices, I still think it will be very cautious on that front. Again, because I don't really see the Chinese government taking a punt on future oil prices. I'm not sure it makes sense, again, when you think about a strategic reserve. So I think there's going to be a big disconnect going forward as well between what the government sees that the SPR is there for, how it's willing to test and use the mechanism, and how markets perceive any movement by China.
Well, Mikhail, thank you so much for your time today and that fascinating insight into the China SPR. And as always, I really enjoyed our conversation, and it really does summarise the key messages that have come from your recent energy brief, China's SPR release, a test of mechanisms rather than a show of market might. I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as all our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our oil, gas, electricity or China programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.